Definitely
Oh
want to
yeah,
talk about it.
I was being somewhat serious about talking about some math stuff too. We don't have to talk about Gödel, obviously, but do you know the Monty Hall problem?
Yeah, of course.
I don't know. That's one that I just like. I don't know. Sometimes I'm just like blown away. Like how could this be true or something? And that's one of the main ones for me.
So I don't know if you want to do this actually on the podcast, but the easiest way for me to explain that one to people that don't understand it is instead of thinking about three doors, think of 100 doors. And so you choose a random door at the beginning of 100, right? And so you have naturally one out of 100 chance. And now me being the host, I open every single other door except the door you picked and one other door. And the car has to be behind either the one you picked or the other door. So like most people when they see that, they're like, oh, well, obviously it's more likely to be in the other door because what's more likely? You just sniped it or...
That's a good way to think about it. I actually love that problem so much. I made my kids do it for science fair like 5 years ago.
Oh, nice.
And as it turns out, that's a super good elementary school science fair problem because what we would do is we built the doors out of Legos. Because Legos.
Yep.
And then we would put like a piece of candy behind each one and kids could try to win the piece of candy.
Oh,
So we're
nice.
giving away candy, so every kid is like, "I want to get in on this." And then we would keep track of results over time for
Right.
the kids that didn't.
Yeah, that's great. The other funny thing I know about that problem is Sam Chen told me one, I forget if he got this as an interview question or if he gave it to someone as an interview question, but he gave like
That's scary. I don't want Sam Chan asking me interview
like
questions.
he gave them the instead of three doors, four doors, and tell me all the different probabilities of the different cases and whatnot. So I thought that was funny.
It's in my repertoire. Every single bar is hard, spitting fire like I'm the human version of Charizard.
Welcome to the Trashalanch. Once again, it's me, Brent Halliburton, here with Mike Boucher and Britt Pybus. 100% attendance rate, as always.
Ooh.
And that is relevant today because we got our first five-star review. It has happened. Adam Tuttle writes, "Pure garbutoxin goodness. This trio brings a lot to the table. I thoroughly enjoyed Mike's mathematical approach and the host's genuine drive for the game. Keep up the hard work and that 100% success rate." Adam knows what's important. So I think that this is the host of the Gotta Watch Them All YouTube show where they watch an episode of the Pokemon series and talk about it. It's a great idea. He also has three podcasts and they're great. They have a number of things that I look at and I think, like, I recognize it's going to take us time to find like the right meme-y things. And I've thought about the like doing something meme-y on the show, like I'll describe a Pokemon to you guys and you have to somehow guess it or some like nonsense like that. Like I recognize people like game show elements.
We do that at like if you're with a big group of players that you're waiting for your food at a restaurant or something. We really like to play like 20 questions with Pokemon, and it gets really hard. I forget the exact rules. But there's a few sort of qualifiers that sort of make it difficult. Like you just can't ask certain kinds of questions, and I don't remember what specific to Pokemon is off limits. But it's hard. It's fun. I always it's you get stumped on the weirdest ones sometimes. Like I don't know. I know my go-to for Pokemon that I just don't think people know of is I think I'm blanking. Huntail. Huntail. I wanted to say Gorbis, but I would initially go to Gorbis, but I know that there was a deck in 2004 with Gorbis that was good, with Gardevoir, I think. So I try not to go with that one. But those, for me, those are the most forgettable ones.
That's the thing, right? If you're hanging out with card players, we only know the Pokemon that have been in decent decks, right? It's really easy to not know Pokemon that have never been in even a somewhat competitive deck.
Both of those, I was like, yeah, I think I remember selling that bulk at some point.
Yeah.
That's my connection to those cards.
The other,
they have three shticks. One of them is they both, so it's two guys that do this podcast. They crack a pack and they tell you what they got in their pack on the podcast.
Nice.
And it ends with them, no, the first thing they do when they crack the pack is they just read out the code.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah, whoever's the first listener gets
great.
It.
Exactly. They're like, good luck.
That's funny.
And then they have a thing where they say they have a like card art of the week where they randomly pick a Pokemon and then they look at all the card art and they decide which version of that card was the best. The episode I listened to, they were like, this Kecleon art is by far the best Kecleon art on any card ever.
These are debates I enjoy. When we occasionally have multiple arts of the same card, I like getting heated over those.
Absolutely.
There's some right and wrong answers, to be sure, just like when, choosing your deck.
Crazy stuff.
That's funny.
Crazy stuff. But Adam Tuttle, we salute your wisdom in giving us a 5-star rating, and we salute your podcast right back. They are absolutely delightful.
Absolutely.
So speaking of podcasts, Mike, you betrayed us and went on another podcast this week. You want to tell us like a little bit about that? I listened to it and found it absolutely delightful. I encourage people to go listen to my podcast.
Nice. It's one of my, I guess, ex-colleagues. He taught with me last year. His name's Steve Eno. He started this podcast sometime over quarantine, and he's kind of talking to different people in the world of education. And he has three sons, but two of them are old enough to play Pokemon. And so while we were at the same school last year, I got to like interact with them and play with them a little bit. I think, I forget exactly how old they are, but both younger than 10 for sure. So he wanted to talk to me about, on a couple different levels, my Pokemon history, mostly, I think, advice for parents that have kids that want to get into Pokemon and how they can do it kind of in the easiest way and easiest, but also like most beneficial way, I think. So Brent, if you listen to it, you could tell me if you thought it was good advice. Now looking back at your experience, bringing your kids into the game.
I listened to it. I thought it was really good. There was one moment where I was like, oh my God, I have a fact check for Mike that shows that he's an adult now and not in touch.
Ooh.
They give you cash now, man.
Oh, they do give you cash. They don't give you scholarships even as a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's an all cash business. The U.S. National Championship, that last U.S. National Championship, that was the last time they did scholarships.
Oh, wow. Okay. Good to know.
It's all cash. And if you're listening to this and you have a scholarship still laying around, if you like harass them, they'll cash it out for you. I figured out how to do that. You can reach out to my email or my Twitter or something for more details.
So I wonder then, I guess you're probably forced to get, quote unquote, forced to take the prize money like right away, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Cause like, so for example, like I don't remember exactly how much I got, maybe like $10,000 over the course of, my middle school and high school years. And I didn't actually get it until my graduate year of college because I just wanted to, if you take that, since it was scholarship, if I took it out, then I would have had to claim it on FAFSA and whatnot. So I waited until my very last year so it wouldn't affect financial aid.
right.
So that was actually.
But when you took it out, it was just $10,000, right?
Yeah. They just wrote me a check, but it was nice to be able to like delay getting it, actually.
Yeah, I had exactly the opposite reaction. I was like, whoever this company that Pokemon has that's like managing this thing for them, mm-hmm. they're just making money on the float.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For like the next decade while my kid like rots, right. I could just take that 10 grand and get
invested
something.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I could put it in a savings account and get, like whatever, 1.5% or something.
Right. That makes sense. It was about an hour of the podcast episode. We also went into kind of a lot of the different ways that I think the Pokemon trading card game teaches different mathematical ideas, also non-mathematical ideas too. I talked about kind of resilience and just attitude and whatnot. We did get into definitely some math and probability. And I think the biggest thing that I tried to convey is that playing a game like Pokemon really helps you adapt a probabilistic mindset to the world, I think in general, which I think is super healthy for any individual to have.
Do you think that, this is something I've thought about and I don't, I feel like it's a well thought out, but it may be a little strange sounding. And now that we're on the topic of probability, I'd be interested in what some two people who are much better at math than me think about it. So in terms of, so I just don't think like using probability for like physical cards works, because there's no all chances being equal or something like that when you're dealing physical cards. Your physical cards are all going to be weighted differently. They're going to have damage on their sleeve. You know, all these sort of physical elements that sort of would have to be a part of your calculations. And I just wonder how useful it is using. I mean, obviously, it's still going to be really useful and kind of on the mark, but I just wonder sort of how much sort of discrepancy that can account for. So like, I don't think this really affects things all that much, but to a certain level, I don't know why it wouldn't, you know, especially, you know, you take examples like, you know, that some of the heart gold, soul silver primes are really warped, computer search, the ace specs. I think the emerald set from the EX arrows, I think that's the one that sort of had the really bad reputation for being one of the worst sets, but maybe it was Deoxys or something. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. But anyways, like I know you, at one point I remember Jimmy Ballard wouldn't let his players play Donphan primes in tournaments. He's like forced them to proxy them at their tournaments because it was just so obvious where it was and stuff like that. But you know, I think that's sort of applicable at all times to any card. Like, you know, say you live in Arizona or something, you leave your binder out in your car during a league cup, you come back and they're all warped from the heat and stuff like that. And I just feel like these sorts of considerations affect our ability to sort of parse through the actual probability, you know, such that like, it's just maybe not all that useful or not abundantly useful to think in that terms, or at least that's my biggest argument for why we have to just play digital games, I think. Where this is not a factor, but I may be, you know, mischaracterizing or equivocating on something here.
I feel like, I mean, it's great to have like podcast hot takes. Our podcast needs like more hot takes, right? Math and Pokemon is a lie. I mean, what you're saying is, you know, probability has become less relevant when people can stack their deck, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not even trying to use it in terms of cheating. I'm almost using it in the sense of being entirely honest. You know, I don't know how my cards are weighted, but there's just no way that all 60 cards have an equal probability, you know, and the way you shuffle would have to matter too, just the sort of physical effect you do on it. And like, if you just strictly pile shuffle or something too, you know, that we have this sort of conversation every time, you know, double nickeling or something.
Yeah, comes pile up, shuffling was a lie.
Right. But, you know, you can't pile shuffle is also, you know, you're just creating a sequence. You're not creating randomization or something like that.
Right.
Well, I do think that like when people complain about the PTCGO algorithm, they're really stupid because.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because, right. Because of that reason. And I don't know. I don't know how much of shuffling in real life and randomization in real life is a function of the physical qualities of the cards, kind of like what you're describing, or if it's more of a function of just bad shuffling. And, you know, people think that they're good at shuffling and they might even like, you know, ruffle shuffle seven times like they're supposed to, but, you know, it's just, it's never, ever, ever going to be as random as a, you know, an actual randomization algorithm. So I don't know. My personal like instinct is that the physicalness of the cards is, you know, definitely a factor, but not a huge factor. I mean, what would you have to do to test it, right? You'd have to do something like millions of hands physically, and like compare that against millions of hands.
Right. Yeah. I think sort of what I'm asking for is a lot of work for a probability that yields, you know, 0.04% of a difference, right, or something like that. I think about in philosophy, you know, which is what I'm in, there are certain people who are like, no, absolute certainty, we have to have it. If you don't have certainty, then what's the point? Which I'm not trying to make that argument or anything, but it's, you know, where these thoughts are coming from, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I think about every time I think about that difference, and like, you're obviously like, there's some difference, right? I mean, people declump physical decks. Like, people declump physical decks all the time, right? People pile shuffle. Like, you do all these things to de-randomize your randomization to ensure a more optimal randomization, right? Like, the thing I always think about is when Apple introduced the first iPod and, like, it would randomly play songs, one of the things that they ended up having to go back and change in the second software release is make the software make it play less randomly, because too frequently it would play the same song again, or play the song that you heard like two songs earlier or three songs earlier. And if people were like, it's not working, it's broken. And they're like, no, like, that's random. And people were so dissatisfied and confused. They were like, okay, we're going to make our random song player like random. Less random. Let's go. This is what the people want.
I like it.
All right. The last thing we should talk about before we should talk about Pokemon is, are you guys on this whole Among Us craze?
It's just my Fall Guy experience. I see it and I want to play it. If anything, I want to play it more because I love these kinds of games. These are my favorite kind of games. Secret Hitler, The Resistance, Werewolf, Mafia, all those, just absolute favorite. Just games where sort of nothing but arguing. So I don't actually really know what the actual, if any, gameplay elements are. I just understand that it's like these games. I haven't actually watched a stream or anything of it, but it's the same problem I've had with Fall Guys.
I also haven't played it, but I'm a little more informed than Brit, and I very much intend to play this one. I never really intended to play Fall Guys.
All right, so let me know when you guys want to play. You know, send a message on Discord, and I will hop on and play with you guys. I am, as it turns out, it's funny because, like, I think I'm pretty good at Resistance, but I'm really, really bad at this.
I don't understand exactly what a different era of the game. People just don't understand that Resistance just used to be part of Pokemon tournaments, which is just sort of strange and probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you just weren't there. But so Resistance is, you know, one of these games where you just kind of, you know, sort of the Prisoner's Dilemma as a board game or something, and you just end up arguing with each other over who's trying to screw over who or that sort of thing. And this, and Jason Klasinski, you know, the best player of all time, or one of them at the very least, just like really wanted to play this game at tournaments, and he was just the player, and that's just kind of what you did a lot of the time. And maybe I'm speaking too generally. Maybe this really only applies to me because I was in this social circle, you know, and not everyone was, but it wasn't exclusive or anything like that. He wanted everyone to play for sure. And I don't know, it just characterizes a lot of past tournaments for me.
For me, I was super grateful for that experience, and I had a similar experience with Michael Catron's dad, Mickey. I mean, he always was bringing like all kinds of crazy board games, and I felt like as a dad, like our like idea of all the different like what's a cool game and all the things we could play were that's just another thing that like Pokemon brought my family was. We play so many more like fun, crazy video games or board games now than we ever would have. Like, I don't think we would have bought Exploding Kittens. Mm-hmm. I don't think we would have bought Resistance. I don't think we would have bought, maybe we would have bought Ticket to Ride, but like, you know, all these fun games that are like, so like it ain't Monopoly, right?
Right.
So it's great to see people being creative in that way. It's been really fantastic for us.
Yeah.
All right. People want to talk about cubes.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I was just going to mention it quickly because I was going to play Among Us this past Friday with some of the X-Files guys, but we ended up cubing instead. And it was really fun, actually. And I just wanted to mention quickly, so Spencer Nall, Brent, you know Spencer. I don't know, Britt, if you know Spencer, but so he has been for a long time kind of updating a black and white on cube, so all the cards are expanded legal, and he recently updated it with Darkness Ablaze, so he wanted to play it, and the way that we did it was really cool. There's like a Google sheet that someone created that you can input all of the cards in the cube, and then each person gets a tab in the you know, in the spreadsheet file. And Spencer presses a button and it auto-populates packs, like 15 card packs or however many card packs you want. You get to click the card that you want. It goes into your pile and then Spencer clicks another button and it passes the pack. And it's, so it was a really interesting way to do a cube online. We didn't have to use Tabletop Simulator. We just did it through Google Sheets. We got a, you know, we drafted, I forget, maybe like 80 cards. We built our deck and then we just built the deck on TCG1 and played on TCG1. So it was a really, it was a pretty sweet experience. I wanted to mention it.
It would be awesome if he like wrote that up in a blog or something. Like, I mean, because I have young kids, we've never really done cubing, but like Black and White On is right in my kids' wheelhouse. They're like, well, we know all these cards. Let's right. go.
Should we explain what cubing is, just to be clear, perhaps, if people aren't familiar?
Yeah, sure. So a cube is a predetermined set of cards. I think the number of cards varies between like 500 and 800. That sounds like a decent range. And they can be pretty much whatever you want. So when I said this cube in particular only had like Black and White On cubes, I saw Alex Szymanski had a cube that was based around electric. And so all the cards could be played with the electric. And then you draft how you would draft. Not so much, Pokemon doesn't really have draft the way that other games do, but you get a subset of, you break the cube into a number of quote unquote packs. So in this case, we had 15 card packs. And then you open your pack, you take one card, and then you pass the pack to the person on your right. And then you take a card from that pack, pass it to your right. And until 15 cards are up, then you open a new pack, you do the same thing. Typically, you'll do maybe like 5-6 packs, 4-6 packs, depending on it. Anything else you want to add, Britt? Yeah. And then, so
is cubing like the most fun form of like trading card game action? I mean, I saw there was like somebody put out a tweet, I want to say like today-ish, where they're praising cubing as the greatest of all things. And I recognize, like, you know, it's a set of cards designed to be played. So in that way, like, it's fun.
Well, I think that's a good point for me to chime in, because I feel perhaps the only person on the planet who thinks this, but I don't really like cubing. And my friends know this. I've cubed with Puka a couple times, and I don't quite know how to pronounce his last name. I'm sorry, but Kyle L. from the Indiana area.
Leskowitz or something like that.
Yeah. I'm not like against it. I just don't really like limited in general ever. And it's just kind of, you know, more manifestations of that. I just feel my deck, you know, you're just sort of, your decks aren't ever all that good. And cubing is much better than limited, to be sure, because there's good evolution lines. Like, it's meant to be sort of engaging. It's not quite like how sealed is sometimes, or at least sealed in Pokemon always is, where you just match whatever you pull it together.
All pre-releases are terrible.
Yeah. Right. It just, I don't know. Maybe I'll warm up to it. Maybe I just sort of haven't done it. And also too, like I've always felt this way. So this next sort of complaint isn't like new, but since I've sort of never been interested, I can't compete, because the people who like cubing, especially when they're you know, you're at Worlds or something and you play Kyle's cube like 4 or 5 times, like you learn it and you get good at it. And so I'm just like, well, I don't like it, and I certainly don't want to learn it either. You guys have fun. I'll just go take a nap.
So I'm not a huge cube person. I probably like it more than you, Britt, but not nearly as much as someone like Michael Slutsky. So the things that I think contribute to having a good experience with a cube is, one of them you mentioned is everyone's kind of got to know the cube and know what the cards do. So that's why I actually really like the Black and White On one, is because they're more in recent memory. quite honestly, the cards are simpler than a lot of older cards. So you don't have to, if you don't know a card, you don't have to spend a ton of time reading that card. That's why a lot of the older cubes, like the one I think that Slutsky was using this summer, was a lot of older cards than that. And it's a much higher barrier of entry because you got to either know the cards or you got to like read a wall of text every time you don't know a card. So that's one thing that I think contributes. If like half the people are not familiar with the cube, it takes a lot longer and it's just not as good of an experience. The other thing is like just the initial design of the cube, right? And that can have like a big impact on if it's fun or not. So like when we played, and part of that is like you play the cube to test the inclusions in the cube. So like when we played last week, it became very apparent that Sylveon GX was way too strong. Like someone drafted a 3-2 Sylveon line and, you know, if they started Eevee, they won the game every time because they just get three cards. And that was so much more powerful than the search and draw that everyone else had. Like they would go Sylveon into, and then they had Gardevoir GX too, right? Which is, so like that was not a very fun experience when we were playing because you played against him, you just got destroyed. And then someone else had, there wasn't a lot of tag teams in there, but someone had Lucario Melmetal, which was also very, very, very strong in a, you know, in a draft format. So if you have cards that are way too overpowered, then that also takes away from the enjoyment.
Did they put a Rangaroo in the cube?
No.
I was wondering, I mean, there's some cards that I think we look back and we say, however, those cards printed.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Do we want to talk about the official Pokemon podcast for a second? I don't think there's that much to say, but let me put it out there. It started the same week we did, and they just called it off. I think there's a reason. I think they've recognized the Pokemon podcasts are now under control. We got that.
Easy. We took them down.
Exactly.
Yeah, posting. It seems like they'll come back at a certain point. But I think they're reevaluating things, it seems like, maybe.
Yeah. Why don't we skip to talk about the current meta and give people some actual like Pokemon action? I think that's what the people want to hear about. Mike, you wanna kick us off with some talk about the crazy decks that we're seeing?
Sure. There was, as always, every week, there's a bunch of tournaments now. one of the ones that did quite well in multiple events was, I'm pretty sure it's a Japanese player, but I'm not 100% sure, who played a Pika Ram list that ran 4 Crushing Hammer. And it might have ran 1 Yell Grunt as well. And so actually earlier last week, it did well in the Hegster tournaments by someone. I might have mentioned that last week, I'm not sure. But then it also did well this past weekend. So it seems, and the, you know, the lists were only a couple cards off, same concept. So that's kind of a deck to look out for. I only played a couple games with it. I've played a bunch of the regular Pika Ram list, the one with Zigzagoons and Jirachi and Nets, but the Pika Hammers doesn't have Jirachis, doesn't have Goons, doesn't have Nets in favor of the energy denial package. I don't know. I'm a little surprised that it's done as well as it has. It feels like, actually counterintuitively, it seems like it has a worse ADPZ matchup. Like it's obviously better if you hit a Crushing Hammer early, but in general, I actually think regular Pika Ram has a pretty good ADPZ matchup. And part of that is because you full blitz on the ADP and then you tag bolt for 5 prizes. And then you have to clean up one last thing. So usually that'll be another Dedenne or a Crobat. But if they don't have a second Dedenne, but they do have a Crobat, then you need 2 Zigzagoon pings to be able to kill that with Raichu. And the extra damage from Zigzagoons actually ends up helping quite a lot. The other thing that happens with the energy removal version is since you don't have Jirachi, you have to play Dedennes down more often. And those are just targets for the ADPZ to kind of gust around your big guys. And the regular Pika Ram can often like avoid playing down Dedenne and just kind of set up, because you don't need a lot to go full blitz into the tag bolt. Like that doesn't require you to play Dedenne a lot of the time. So I'm a little interested in that and how that works. Maybe it's better against Eternatus. I guess it's probably a bit better there, but I think the matchup's probably still bad if they run four switch. Because the way you beat Eternatus in general is just by like paralyzing them and hoping they don't play four switch. So that's definitely an interesting deck that is on the rise, though. The next one on the list I have is Tina Chomp Toolbox. And so I don't think this definitely didn't win anything, but I think it just did well. Or it did like okay.
I feel like it
got top eight.
Talking about it. I haven't played a game with it yet, but it's definitely on people's minds.
Yeah. I've played a couple of games with it just to like get a feel for it. It feels okay. Feels decent. So the general strategy is kind of like old Tina Chop decks where, you know, you ping stuff or you linear attack them and then you hit them for 240 with Calamitous Slash. You play a couple other tech attackers like Vika Vault. Some lists have one Mewtwo, one Latios GX to stop ADP. Some don't have that. Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty cool deck. And I think it's cool that people are like experimenting with different things, right? That's something we talked about last week, I think, as well.
I haven't tried it yet, but people seem to be telling me the Hammers build of Pikachu Zekrom. They like it, yeah, from what I've heard from the people I talked to about decks. I meant to play with it today and I didn't get around to it, but just generally still impressed with the, like what you were saying, like, yeah, they have continued to be impressed with Pikachu being fine still.
Yeah.
And yeah, the Tina Chomp deck is really interesting to me and seems like it should be okay. I think there's a lot of synergy and it looked pretty consistent. I don't quite know what some of the tech Pokemon do, like the Regirock and maybe one card.
They kill Eternatuses. That's about it. That's all you got to know.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the, I think, big talking points of the format is Eternatus would maybe be not as good if there were better fighting Pokemon, but you have to put them in decks like these, it seems, right, to make it work. There's not enough fighting support for like mono fighting or what have you to be good enough, but there's sort of other ways to make it work.
Yeah.
Which I like. I really like the energy count. I really love the Tapu Koko. I just think that acceleration is really, I don't know, I want to say underrated because I'm not sure how much more it splashes into, but it's just like the expanded deck that mm-hmm. Hunter won regionals with. Just,
yep,
you have colorless energy. Why not? Why don't we try to use this Pokemon?
Yeah, it's really strong. I will say, going back to Pikachu a little bit, so I played it in one of the Atlas tournaments, and I've also really enjoyed playing it. The one thing that it doesn't have going for it that some other decks do, like ADP and Eternatus, is it doesn't have like the run really hot factor. And I've experienced that particularly playing against the Eternatus matchup where, you know, like I win game one, I lose game two, and then game three, I'm like, all right, I'm in a really good spot here. And then they do something absolutely ridiculous. Like game three, I went first attached. They went attached. And I go turn two full blitz, three energy on a bench, Raichu. I'm like, all right, we're good. I knew that they only played like one or two switch at this point. So I was like, all right, we're good. And then they only had two Pokemon out. They had one Eternatus active, one Eternatus bench. They go, boss my Raichu, evolve to the VMAX, Crobat for six, fill their bench, and one-shot my Raichu. And I'm like, what? Like, that was so ridiculous. They actually had to hit, like, they drew six cards with Crobat, and they had to draw five basics off of that six cards. And they did. So, like, that is, and then, like, another game against Eternatus, they had used two switch and I paralyzed them and stamped them to one and they hit a switch. And so it's just like, it feels like Pikachu is like pretty good and consistent with what it's doing. And it's a fairly good strategy, has a good game plan against a lot of decks, but you know, sometimes ADPZ just Mawiles two of your Dedennes and puts them on the bench. And then they are able to kill two things before you win. And so, And then and Pikachu in Zekrom just doesn't have that like broken random option. It's kind of like in Hearthstone where you don't have the, if you don't have like created by cards.
I feel like they have to take away your Pokemon card because there's no like angry tweets after that happens.
I've been trying really hard.
Format. People are never punished.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been trying really hard not to post my sour grapes.
I know that's, I think, a good way to just characterize just sort of how I've developed through the game. Just like at one point in time, that would have made me really mad, but now I just sort of think those occurrences are funny. It's yeah, just right. Like, you got me.
Yep, good job, buddy.
Like, I don't know. I some of the tournaments I was going to last fall, I remember I had a couple games like that, and it's just like, oh, well, I get to go home 3 hours early. Yeah. No skin off my bone, no salt here. Like, yeah. I'm just here, and I don't know. I feel like I took years too long to learn to have fun with the game, but now I, you know, I'm just sort of flowing with it or what have you.
That's funny. So Azul won one of the no ADP tournaments this past week, and I think it was the second major one. He won it with Mad Party. I think he played the Dugong line as well that started seeing some play last week with Will Dark Fury. So that was cool to see. And in general, the no ADP tournament seemed to be more diverse even than the first one. Less Eternatus, which I think makes sense with Sandaconda winning the previous one. So I think that allowed some different decks to do well. Saw a Spirit Tomb deck made top 8. I think that's cool to see. And I do think it's interesting to think about a little bit. My guess would be like, even in that format, something like Mad Party is probably not tier 1. It's probably tier 2. But without ADP, it allows decks that, you know, Mad Party goes from like being tier 4 to tier 2. And some similar with like Sandaconda, right? It goes from being like totally unplayable to like, you know, that's a pretty decent play. And I think that happens with a lot of decks. They go from tier 4 or unplayable to, okay, this deck could win the tournament, which I think is pretty sweet.
I wish I had more to say about Mad Party, but I think you've accurately characterized it. Like, it seems like a really fun deck to play if you don't mind taking a lot of L's.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the thing, right? Like, it doesn't have positive matchups across the board, like even disregarding ADP. Like, it has good matchups and it has some meh matchups, but the fact that it has an basically unwinnable ADP matchup just in the regular standard format makes it unplayable because you can't take a decent matchup spread and then a strict auto loss to one of the top 3 decks. Speaking of ADP, we had the Hexter tournament on Monday was won by ADP catchers, I would call it. I think it ran 3 boss, 3 Pokemon catcher, and a great catcher. So it forgoes a lot of the extra stuff that you might find in other lists, such as Duraludon, and I don't even think it played Marnie, to be honest with you. I think it ran a bunch of energy spinners. So like it wanted to do one thing, which was turn 1 or turn 2 GX attack and then gust your crap up and kill it. And maybe that's the best way to play ADP. Just do its one thing that it wants to do really, really well.
That was my next question. I mean, do you have a reaction to the catcher's list? I mean, do you feel like trying to just focus on gusting stuff up is optimal strategy, or do you think now that people have seen it, people play around that?
I don't know. I think maybe the list could adapt.
Pony is the question.
Right. So I do think the list could maybe adapt and run 2. It runs 1 mile right now, but I think it could actually run 2 if it really wanted to go all in on the catcher strategy. Mawile is actually super annoying. There's a lot of decks that I think beat ADP without them playing Mawile. Like Decidueye Obstagoon, I actually think is unfavored against ADP because of Mawile, which is really annoying. It should be like a strict auto win for the most part. But, and I've been working on like different ideas for like Decidueye and Obstagoon and Zamazenta, and like Mawile just really crushes those ideas. So Mawile is actually a MVP, I think, in a list like that.
Well, let's talk about the next thing on the list.
Britt, you want to talk about Hydreigon?
Yeah, so I think this comes from Tord's stream. I think he was just, I don't know if he got the idea from someone else or was just kind of playing around with it. But so we have a new Mewtwo deck. So we've recently we've moved past just Mewtwo. I guess there was two. You had your Welder and your Perfection Mewtwo. And then we got Water Mewtwo, and now we have Dark Mewtwo. And so we have Hydreigon from Darkness Ablaze that just has Rain Dance, but for dark energy. And then basically from there, you have your Mew and Mewtwo tag team and most of the other dark tag teams, and then two Hoopa GX. And I have not played any games with it personally, but from, I know Dustin Zimmerman is the person I've talked to the most who likes it. And the idea is that you take two prizes. You try to take two prizes at some point, but then you try to checkmate them or what have you. Umbreon and Darkrai GX's attack, you just try to get it with as much energies as possible, and then you use it, and then they can't play anything, and then you try to win the game on the next turn with Tyranitar, I want to say, but I can't remember what the combo is. I don't quite understand it, if I'm being totally honest. I was trying to flip through, I was looking at scans of the cards I didn't know, just here and there while Brent and Mikey were talking. And I don't know how it's supposed to work. But I know from what Dustin has told me, a key part of the strategy is Umbreon and Darkrai's GX attack.
Which does... if you have enough energy, it knocks them out and they can't play any trainers the next turn. Is that right?
I believe so.
Yeah. So I don't know what, yeah, I'd have to see that. I don't know. I haven't seen a list of this, so I don't know what.
I've got it pulled up here.
So I wonder if you would use the other big attack that I can think of is Greninja Zoroark's attack, because it does, it can do, you know, technically infinite damage. So that would be my guess, is that you go like Umbreon Darkrai and then Greninja Zoroark.
Yeah, I would think that's probably your highest damage output. Yeah, I'm not sure what the Tyranitar is supposed to be for, if you sort of never intend to use the GX attack.
Well, its other attack is pretty good. It's a 210, I think, and if you kill a GX, then you take an extra prize.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I think sort of just like with a lot of these decks, at least all the other newer Mewtwo decks, it's like, cool.
No, it's you're thinking of the Sableye Tyranitar GX is the thing. So like for like five dark energies, it does 210. But if it's knocked out, you take an extra prize card.
Right.
So that lets like get that ADP math. Because God forbid somebody banned ADP, we'd have to reinvent it with a different thing.
Yeah, but I think already the consensus is like, yeah, it's good enough, but it's good enough to compete, not good enough to win, something to that effect. Like, it's good to have creative decks, trying new things, especially with Mewtwo.
Yeah.
Mewtwo is, I think, one of the coolest cards we've ever had, just in terms of power and versatility, which is always what Mew and Mewtwo are about. Right. So I think design-wise, it works really well within the game, or I really love it as a card, and it's cool to see it in different examples. But so much of the big dogs of the format just kind of have solved, so they don't play fair. They play their own game, you know, with Mawile, that sort of thing. And it just gets hard to deal with that with your creative strategies, but that's true of any format too. There's always something holding your fun deck back.
Yeah,
and I like that you guys are working on it, because I've always felt like the dark tag teams, the problem was always they needed so much energy.
Right.
I mean, I recognize if you're playing against something like Eternatus, you know, the Sableye Tyranitar GXs has the if you have 10 energies on it, you can Giga Fall GX and discard 15 cards from their deck. Like, that would be a thing.
Yeah, right. one of my younger brothers hadn't really, he started getting back into the game a little bit a couple months ago, and I was showing him some of the cards that have come out in the last couple of years, and like he looked at, I showed him that GX attack and he just started cracking up. He's like, first of all, 10 energy cards. Second of all, discard 15 cards. Like that one and like the Iggy Buff trio one, I think are the most hilarious GX attacks.
I want to say there was some situation where people were actually trying to use the Tyranitar attack. It was because they were what's the one that lets you move the energies around?
Weavile.
It was when the Weavile GX decks were kind of around like a year ago, like around like Worlds NAIC. Mm-hmm. There was a deck running around where every once in a while you could get enough dark energy on the board where you're like, I'm gonna do this.
Yep.
But
some Mewtwo decks that would play it occasionally with the Silk Alio that tried to that you used really early just to flood your board. I lost to it. I recall. I don't remember what I was playing, but it showed up every now again when I was playtesting for the Pog tournament, I think.
Yeah. It was like Naganadel Weavile. Mm. And then you'd have like this one tech Tyranitar, and it was a counter to like Pidgeotto decks because they'd get themselves down to three or four, and you'd be like, I just got to use this Naganadel a couple more times, and then I'll Giga Fall out his entire deck and melt his face. And it was like an auto loss if he got set up. You were like, oh, there's nothing that the Pidgeotto Nuke can do.
Yeah, that's funny. The last thing that I'll say about just Mewtwo decks in general is that they're checked really hard, I think, by Eternatus. Like, just 270 HP is just not what it used to be. Eternatus just smacks it. So, like, you have to have it. Like Mewtwo Welder has a really bad matchup against Eternatus. I think the Water Mewtwo has a chance just because it can one-shot back Eternatus. It still needs, like, a lot of energy, but it would strike me that this deck would be worse than Water Mewtwo against it because it has a way to one-shot, but you need a stage two versus stage one, right? So you're just inherently going to get that less often.
Right. Can we talk about the control article on six prizes for a second?
Too? Yeah, so that was the last thing on the list of interesting decks to talk about is both, I think yesterday, maybe 2 days.
I have a deck I can talk about too.
Okay, cool. Still. So yesterday or 2 days ago, I don't know how to say his name, Kane, maybe, released an article on six prizes outlining a couple different control decks that were pretty interesting. The most interesting one for sure was a Starly control deck. Starly has an attack for two colorless that lets you search your deck for two cards, but it is free if you use Birdkeeper that turn. And so, I don't know, he a very good article, and it kind of talks through some different variants, some different common lines of play. The other lists ran Excadrill because Noranguru. But this one was just Starly. So really good article. And then I think Grant just posted a couple hours before we recorded an article on Poga Beach. I haven't looked at that one yet, but it also goes over, looks like Excadrill control decks. So the fact that kind of these both came out back to back, we haven't seen control do well in any of these events. I think partially it's because nobody really knows how to play it. So maybe this will change after this. The other thing that I'd be interested in is especially these timed events that are like best of one, 30 minutes. Can a control deck win in that time? I'm not sure. So, yeah.
So I thought the interesting thing about the six prizes article was, you know, he kind of started out with this idea of playing it with just like, I'm going to drop in Lucario Melmetal as a replacement for Articuno, and that'll be fine. And then you just play it like Pidgeotto and you strip them at some point and stamp them and play Jesse James and then do your thing. And I thought it was funny because I thought it was a really good article too, except like the one thing that amused me was he kind of, at the end, he was like, here's my core loop for how I play the deck. But like the core loop is, assuming you already have the lockup, once you get the lockup, like you can figure that all out. The real question is, how do you get the lockup? But he said he kind of abandoned the Lucario Malmetal and replaced it with Surprise Box and Mawile.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, what we're going to do is just bench stuff that they don't want to bench, and then bosses order it up and lock it, as opposed to kind of the classic Pidgeotto, strip whatever's in the active and then, you know, strand it there the rest of the game. Any reaction to those things? Like, they, what's interesting is they both seem a little complicated. So it's not clear to me what the best is.
Yeah, I mean, I read, so first of all, I think the article is just as good an example of how to go through the deck building process than it is of control specifically. So props to the writer for that. But I kind of came away from the article still being like, I don't really know how this deck wins. Like, what is the win condition of this deck? I'm not 100% sure. I mean, like, you know, in theory I know, but like, yeah, I was also confused on that. Like, he mentions Persian a lot, you know, discarding key cards and leaving them with nothing, but it, I don't know. I guess I'd probably just have to play it and start seeing these different scenarios in order to really understand. Because it is, it seems very complicated.
So no surprise of all of these lists, those are the ones that I've played. I think the Persian is interesting because I think his theory is, and it's not bad, is like, I think everybody thought that the challenge Pidgeotto control had with Zacian is like, they'll just draw three cards. Mm-hmm. Like, you're never going to be able to stop them from eventually getting there. And I think his theory is, if you can hand lock them, if you can find four terrible cards, then they can Zacian turn after turn, and you just keep attacking with Persian.
Right.
And eventually they're just going to have the four terrible cards, like, every turn. It's the same four terrible cards.
Yeah.
I haven't actually found myself in a game situation where that works, but I get the theory.
Yeah. That's funny. It does seem like ADP seems to be like the matchup that you got to think the hardest about. But some of the other decks for sure, I think, are susceptible. Like Eternatus benches a ton of stuff, right? So it doesn't seem that hard in theory. And they're only taking one prize a turn, so you have a lot of time. So it doesn't seem that hard in theory to lock that deck. I think Pikachu and Zekrom, similar. Blacephalon, similar. Like, they got to bench stuff, even though they have the, you know, the energy acceleration for some of these other decks. They still got to bench things. I don't know.
I'm very excited about, I recognize when the next set comes out and, you know, there's a stage two that turns all their supporters into draw three, well, control will be in a much better place.
Mm. Yeah, that'll be, I didn't even think of, just wait, Shiftry has to be active though, I think.
Shiftry does, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how good it'll be in control, but it could be.
Mm. All right, interesting. it's going to be Shiftry Munchlax all the way. That's how I roll, guys. Just flip heads a lot. It's no problem.
So that's all of the interesting decks that I had to talk about from this past week.
Obviously, you've left out one important interesting deck. Is there a Spiritomb update?
I am currently 2-1 in the Atlas tournament that I am playing Spiritomb in. I'm supposed to have my fourth game in a couple hours. The one game I lost was to Decidueye Obstagoon because don't play a counter to Obstagoon, so that's unfortunate. I don't know. I've been playing the kind of the same list. I run two Lilies Pokadol. Seems pretty good. The one thing to update is in the no ADP tournament last week, Jimmy Watts from Europe, he got top eight with Spiritomb, and it was pretty much, so two main differences, but otherwise it was almost the exact same list that I've been playing. So the two main differences, it ran three Hoopas, which I think makes more sense in a no ADP format because you would expect more single prize decks. And so Hoopa is pretty good at trading. You kill Jirachis, you kill Mad Party things, that type of stuff. And he dropped the four Birdkeepers for four Pierres, which is interesting. I thought about, I haven't tried it yet. I'll probably try it at some point, but in theory, it seems pretty bad. At least in the regular standard format. Again, maybe it makes more sense in the no ADP format because you don't. But the whole point of running the Bird Keepers is giving you an extra switch to like help build up your damage so that against something like ADP, you can very quickly ramp up your damage to actually one-shot the ADP on turn two or three or whatever you need to do. So I would imagine that's much, much, much harder, but maybe it's totally fine in the no ADP format. So those were the two major differences, but everything else was pretty much the same. So I think Spirit Tomb is...
I feel like the idea of, like, I could see you put the piers in because if you think you're struggling to find Spirit Tombs and, like, get stuff on the board quickly enough, mm-hmm. but I mean, why not run a split? Like, the opportunity to build Spite faster seems so good.
Yeah. The other thing is, like, he must have played a Crobat. I'd have to go look at his list because that's the only way that I could see it being acceptable, because otherwise, like, what, you get an energy and a dark Pokemon and I don't know. It just, it doesn't right. bail you out, right? Like a draw supporter will bail you out of, you know, an otherwise dead hand. Well, if you don't have Crobat, then Piers is not helping very much there.
Right. I think that covers the show notes, guys. Is there other stuff that we should talk about?
I had a deck I wanted to mention. I've been playing with, so this was from my friend Colin, who I probably talk about a lot. He built an Eternatus list with Weezing, Galarian Weezing, a pretty heavy commitment to it. He played 4-3. And so Weezing is pretty good. So it shuts down abilities, every ability but it, from the active position. And then for one darkness energy, it poisons, but it's some extra poison. It's 4 damage counters. And in general, I think it's really good. I've played quite a bit with it, and I've played against him as well, and I've been pretty impressed with it, and it's something I definitely intend to keep exploring. And I guess just the general theory is that Weezing is sort of good against really sort of the way that the normative Eternatus build, how it usually looks, just doesn't have answers to heavy Zamazenta, so you have a really bad matchup against Lucario Melmetal. It doesn't have a Decidueye answer. I'm trying to remember what else it has. It's really good against these fringe Mewtwo decks. They typically don't have anything but Gust around. The poison really adds up. Like sometimes you know, even against something like Senescorch, any deck really, so many decks play tons of switching cards, so it's not always good, but you can find a time, you know, after a stamp or something, just to poison them, and if they whiff the switching card, the damage adds up really fast. And in general, the deck plays a little bit differently. It's not nearly as aggressive as the normal list, but I think it's fine. So initially I started with his list and played a lot with it and was, you know, tinkering with it the whole time and sort of came to a almost completely new deck that was still had the Weezings, but probably looked a little bit more like the standard list. But then we play tested and he played it much differently. So I sort of was operating behind what we've talked about before with ADP, how, you know, perhaps it's best to always go second and you just try to focus on power accelerating and getting 2 energy on the board on your first turn. But Colin plays it a little bit differently. His intention is always to go first and always to, he tries to get coughing in the active position. And then what that allows him to do is that if it lets him go straight into the Weezing if it survives, and if it doesn't, it really doesn't matter for the most part. You're usually not like ADP doesn't knock it out for the most part because they have to alter creation GX. So they start their prize race a little bit after, but against most other decks, it doesn't typically affect your ability to play the prize game you want. And then I think too, it just has some really good answers for your tough matchups. And I'm not sure if it's, you know, maybe it's not consistent enough at the end of the day, but I've been really impressed with it in the game so far.
And just think ability lock is always very good, and it happens to be on a pretty good Pokemon, I think.
So a couple questions, because I remember seeing this and kind of writing it off, and then but with the intention of looking at it again, and so now you've reignited my interest. So first of all, Weezing shuts off your own B-Max's ability, correct? So if it's in the active, you can't have 8 bench? Or no?
I don't think so. I mean, on PTCGO, I'm not, anytime it's active, I don't lose all my bench Pokemon.
Oh, maybe it's just opponents then. I don't actually know what the card does. Let's see.
Yeah, pretty
your
sure
opponent's it's just, Pokemon.
It's all abilities but Weezing, I'm pretty
all
sure.
All of your opponent's Pokemon.
Oh, just opponents.
Yeah. Because if it was all, then it would shut it off.
Right, yeah, it would not be good then.
Right. Sure. Okay, so that takes care of one of my concerns that I thought I would have.
It's my problem. I don't read cards. So I was just like, well, I know the game doesn't do that, but I don't know if that's an error or not.
That would actually be, like, it'd probably be worse overall, but there would be interesting interactions, right? Where, like, maybe your Eternatus gets damaged and then you switch into the Weezing, you discard it, whatever. But,
And maybe it's almost sort of something more like we saw with the Lucario Melmetal deck in the Players Cup, the first Players Cup, and just, like, maybe it's not good on its own, you know, maybe more particular to the Bronzong tech cards that saw success in the Players Cup. But, you know, maybe there's a small metagame for it where it's absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm. So,
you know.
So are there, obviously, like, the fringe matchups, like you said, Weezing is, you probably just go, like, Weezings against something like Decidueye, or
it's really good against Mad Party. It's just really good against like a lot of fringe decks for sure.
So my question is the Weezing actively good against any of the other like tier one, tier two decks like Center Scorch, like ADP, like Mirror?
I think so. And it's for the reason I described. I think if you and again, the list just isn't as fast, and which actually ended up helping. So he doesn't play as many Crobats. He's not, it's not as gung-ho over just really trying to one-shot a VMAX. It plays a pace slower, mm-hmm. and is just, I guess, hedging against other things because it plays some training courts trying to deal with hammers. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how good those are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's still trying to find the right stadium card to play in it. But yeah, just for what I described, if because you probably really are reliant on a stamp play, that's probably your way to win a lot of games,
yeah.
Especially if you need to come back. And that poison adds up fast, and you stamp them to one or two, and they can't use the nets. It's a GX Pokemon, and they don't have enough switches. They've played two or three switches already, then... assuming they don't.
Putting pressure on people to burn switches seems really good.
Yeah.
Like, we're in a meta where, like, you know, retreating is hard.
Yeah.
People run switches and scoop ups like crazy. Does the deck run Zigzagoons also?
Yeah.
It does. It plays three, not four.
So were you able to find a lot of situations where you were able to do that magical thing we talked about last week where you kind of poke him with the Zigzagoon and that sets you up to, like, have it die coming back into your turn? Like, that's living the poison dream, right?
Yeah, right.
It is, for sure. Math, all these Pokemon have too much health. sometimes the poison is just, it's a pester. My Eternatus is not ready to go yet. I'm not too concerned about losing this Pokemon or this single prize. Just buying a little time.
Right. And I recognize when you're doing four damage counters instead of one, like, you don't need perfect math. Like with the Mad Party stuff, I'm sure they just die.
Yeah.
Like, great, going into my turn. Like, you're dead.
The thing I'm most interested in this list is how the mirror match goes. Like, because I could see it going either way. Because, you know, if you promote Weezing 2, 3, 4 times in a game and you make them discard, you know, somewhere from 2 to 3 Pokemon each time, maybe they run out of, like, bench Pokemon, and maybe then they like cap themselves at 150 or 180 after you kill a VMAX. So like that, you have that going for you, but you're slower, so maybe they can like just kill you before like that stuff matters. So that would be a very If it ends up being favored in that matchup, I feel like it could be very good. And if it ends up being unfavored, that might be like the tipping point for me, where if it's unfavored against other Eternatus decks, it's probably not worth playing. But if it is favored, then it might really be.
I would think that sort of your initial just assessment is probably right. Like, it could matter, you could win, but most realistically, you're probably not winning the mirror. It's probably something like 55-45. And maybe Eternatus is just way more popular than I'm giving credit for. And maybe I think this is just sort of indicative of worrying about the wrong things, but something that's something I do as a player. Like I get hung up on the Decidueye decks, the Obstagoon decks, and I just hate losing to gimmick decks.
Yeah.
Let's say. And I'm thinking opposite. Like, yeah, maybe I do. I'll sack the mirror, but I beat Decidueye. I beat Lucario Melmetal. Mm-hmm. And the ADP is the same, probably a similar thing where maybe you're not quite as good as the regular Eternatus build, but Weezing still has plenty of utility here and there. And you're not slow or inconsistent, so you're able to win in the exact same way the normal Eternatus decks are always able to win. You have to draw really well. You have to draw a little bit better, but that's something I like about it. And too, just as I've said, it plays a little bit slower, but this is the first time I have played Piers in the Eternatus deck. And I don't know what it's like in these other decks, but it feels good in this build. It feels to go with this idea that I'm going to have to play it a few paces slower.
Yeah.
And you just sort of bite the bullet or something, and you just get your coughing and you get your energy and prepare for next turn with Weezing in the active. It goes really well with Weezing,
right?
Think too. If you're in the poison strategy and the ability lockdown sort of part of the game,
I feel like Britt just made the argument for you to run like a 1-1 line in Spiritomb today. It's like, I don't like losing to gimmick decks. Fix this.
You need a lot. I don't think you could. I don't think 1-1 would be enough, but 4-3 is certainly enough.
It's interesting when you think this is an advantage. Like, I feel like if I was playing you guys and I was running this deck and you guys were running a regular Eternatus build, inevitably there would come a time where you guys are like, I'm going to retreat my heavily damaged VMAX and bosses order up your Weezing and discard all my damaged Pokemon now, and you lose.
It's really good against Blounds too, so the math works out. It's hard to do. You have to Zigzagoon right, but the 120 isn't too hard to trip going back into your turn. Mm-hmm. And it's just, if you can do that and stamp them, their comeback potential is terrible without abilities. They need Oricorio and Jirachi off stamp for the most part, and that can really help because it seems that Blounds has sort of fizzled. Kind of was really popular at first when I think people were realizing that it was playable in the format, but I don't feel like I see it as much, probably for consistency reasons, but it'll still beat your three prize decks when it draws really well. And again, you know, maybe all the Weezing deck does is sacrifice consistency for fringe matchups, and maybe that's okay still.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed my time with it and definitely planned on spending more time with it as we get closer and closer to getting those tournament keys.
Yeah. I'll give it a try. Looks cool.
Guys, I think that wraps up the show.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone. It's been a good week. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It helps us a lot reach the masses of Pokemon fans all over the world. Peace out.
Expect new and exciting things to come from us in the coming weeks.